Good evening, folks. On this Saturday, the 19th of February, 2022, I'm your host, Mark Hall. When it comes to summarizing a week like this, how better than with a look at Justin Fidel Trudeau's final solution in Once Free Canada? Or the crackdown on Freedom Convoy protesters, which looks a lot more like Tiananmen Square each and every day, has begun. Cops have started arresting Freedom Convoy protesters in Ottawa after taking the leaders into custody based on charges of, and I kid you not, committing the offense of mischief. Why, I'm frankly surprised they even let them live. But to put all this in perspective, we really need to start way back at the beginning, at least of the week, and take things in more or less chronological order. From the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, the federal government, meaning theirs, has invoked the Emergencies Act for the first time in that country's history in response to people actually thinking that they have God-given rights and the ability to speak freely and petition their government for a redress of grievances. Ha ha, I guess Big Brother's showing them. The Act, says Catherine Tunney for CBC, grants the Cabinet ability to take special temporary, yeah sure, measures that may not be appropriate in normal times. Obviously, they need special powers to crack down on what Trudeau himself called this small fringe group who don't really have important opinions anyway. Said the Canadian dictator on Monday afternoon, quote, "It is now clear that there are serious challenges to law enforcement, sick, and their ability to effectively enforce what now passes for the law." And you know what, folks? The rest of this quote is downright offensive to people's intelligence, since the jackbooted thugs, he says, are about keeping Canadians safe, protecting people's jobs. Well, unless, of course, your opinion isn't worth having, and restoring confidence in our institutions. Kind of like Tiananmen Square did in communist China. But note that ultimately, they pretty much did what Trudeau's doing now. Meanwhile, a group called the Canadian Civil Liberties Association has condemned their Führer for invoking that Emergencies Act, claiming in a Monday tweet that the Canadian federal government, quote, has not met the threshold necessary, unquote, to do so. Saying that, back when they had a rule of law anyway, it was about a situation that, quote, seriously threatens the ability of the government of Canada to preserve the sovereignty, security, and territorial integrity of the country. And when the situation can't be effectively dealt with under any other actual law of Canada. Which, if you think about it, folks, is pretty much how all of these tyrants got to this point to begin with. Zero Hedge notes, claiming authority under the never-before-used law gives the tyrant there, Trudeau, effectively, martial law control over everything and everyone, and not all of Canada is behind him. But we already know he calls them a fringe minority and says they don't represent Canada anyway. What else is new? I guess at least part of the trouble is those fringe elements include the premiers, which are the equivalent of U.S. state governors of Alberta, Manitoba, Quebec, and Saskatchewan provinces, who all spoke out against Trudeau's extraordinary power grab. And as the UK Daily Mail reported, they called it a dangerous overreach. Other related usurpations, including attempting to choke off any funding for the protesters by invoking the public-private partnerships of fascism over banking, broadening anti-money laundering rules to cover crowdsourcing sites, threatening them with financing terrorism, and evidently just about everything else they can think of, are also on the table. They're going after cryptos, too. And as part of that Emergency Act power grab, says Hal Turner's coverage, the Canadian government has now blocked all social media posts originating from inside of Canada, including Twitter, Facebook, etc., all having been affected by the block. Users can post, but what they post, it says, will not appear on any feeds anywhere if their originating IP address is located in the People's Republic of Canada. For now, at least, some users are getting around this by using virtual private networks. And on this score, folks, a tip of the hat to Tucker Carlson, who actually nailed it with this commentary last night.
When thousands of blue-collar workers showed up in Ottawa several weeks ago to protest the tyranny being imposed against them, the Prime Minister of Canada refused to meet with them or to speak to them. Instead, he fled the city. And then, from his bunker, he called the truckers Nazis.
Well, wait just a second. I guess I have to admit, if there's anybody in Canada who ought to know what a Nazi looks like, every time he sees himself in the mirror, it's Justin Trudeau.
When they still didn't leave the city, Justin Trudeau suspended democracy and declared Canada a dictatorship.
And here, folks, comes the video of Fidel's love child himself. Well, okay, I can't actually prove that any more than anybody can prove who Obama's daddy really was, but I certainly have my own opinion.
The federal government has invoked the Emergencies Act to supplement provincial and territorial capacity to address the blockades and occupations. The Emergencies Act will be used to strengthen and support law enforcement agencies at all levels across the country.
Don't forget, folks, in Nazi Germany, it was called the Enabling Act.
This is about keeping Canadians safe, protecting people's jobs, and restoring confidence in our institutions.
Oh, there it is. Like I said, it really is insulting not only the intelligence of all Canadians, but anybody worldwide with half a brain.
So let's be clear. This is a defining moment in the history of Canada, in the history of the English-speaking West. The Emergencies Act is martial law. It has never been invoked in the history of that country.
And as Tucker goes on to explain in some detail, if Canada was still a free country, they wouldn't be invoking it now against actually peaceful protesters. Oh, and one quick note. This came out later in the week, but it's certainly illustrative. Canada's emergency measures regulations actually bans people from taking part in a public assembly that they suggest might lead to a breach of the peace. However, notes Paul Joseph Watson for Summit News, that law does not apply to any person in a class of persons whose presence in Canada, as determined by the Ministry of Citizenship, is above the law. Suitably politically correct, like refugees, immigrants, and asylum seekers, i.e. in the national interest, and native Canadians need not apply. Take that one more time, you deplorables, you. From there, I guess the best way to try to make sense of the continuing insanity from around the world is more or less chronologically, starting earlier in the week, where I suggested at that point that the appropriate way to understand what was going on was with an analogy. If you've ever seen a boa constrictor crush and suffocate its prey, then you've probably got a pretty good idea what I'm referring to when it comes to today's news stories and the picture they paint. Because every now and then the constrictor actually has to ease up, give the prey a brief, quick breath so it can reposition and get a tighter grip before it puts the pressure back on again. So whether it's tyrants at least appearing to ease up on restrictions, well, in a few places while they tighten down in others, like in Canada, or the deep state and new world order setting up for World War III, along with everything else that goes with it, it's always important to keep an eye out for the bigger picture and that man behind the curtain, too. So the first case in point is the Biden puppet and the bear poking, and oh yeah, the false flag, because Russia's going to attack any day now, by Wednesday for sure, and we may even already have the video prepped and ready to air. Oops. Say what? Putin is withdrawing troops? Well, we got a couple of different ways to look at that story. The only thing we seem to really know for sure so far is, by the time we got to the weekend, they hadn't unleashed the attack, or even the false flag, yet. First from Paul Joseph Watson at Summit News, shortly after media reports suggested that the Russian invasion of Ukraine was imminent, Moscow announced they were withdrawing troops from the border and then claimed it was Western propaganda that had failed. Yep, on the international chessboard, it's check. Goaded by the Biden regime, he says, major news outlets like The Sun reported the invasion was set for Wednesday with a massive missile blitz plan along with 200,000 troops at the ready. But within hours, it appears that Moscow had one-upped them and the media had jumped the gun. And Major General Igor Konashenkov announced that all Russian troops would begin to be withdrawn from the border area, saying, quote, as the forces complete their military exercises, they will, as always, complete a multimodal march back to their permanent bases. The divisions, he added, of the South and West military districts have finished their task and have already begun loading the rail and automobile transport, and today will begin moving back to their military garrisons. And then Russia released their own video clips showing armor being loaded onto railway carriages headed back home. Whereupon the Kremlin seized upon the troop withdrawal as proof of a propaganda victory against the United States. Well, folks, at the very least, it's going to make pulling off any false flag a bit more difficult. As Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova said, 15 February 2022 will go down in history as the day Western war propaganda failed, adding that the West has been, quote, shamed and destroyed without firing a single shot. And you know what, folks? They didn't have to tsunami bomb the U.S. coast or light off a single hypersonic missile. Well, yet, anyway. And as you might suspect, the waste stream press is backpedaling a lot more slowly, Here's the Daily Mail headline, as of Tuesday anyway. We'll believe Putin's withdrawal when we see it. And NATO, it says, is cautiously declaring victory, what else, in the battle to stop Russia from invading Ukraine. While Moscow, alternatively, claims they have disgraced the West just hours after U.S. intelligence warned the troops were in attack positions. Observers, in other words, are still warning that the apparent de-escalation is yet to be confirmed by movements on the ground. And Putin still maintains a large military presence near Ukraine and has the ability to attack at short notice. Now, at this point, folks, your host has to step in and say, come on, let's be honest here. They would be fools if they didn't maintain a troop position on their own border with a potentially hostile foreign power. I mean, after all, look at the United States and its undefended southern border. Well, for a counterexample, anyway. So, well, at least the World War III snake has briefly relaxed its grip. As the week rolled on, there were more diplomatic failures, and by Thursday, shelling and mortar fire from Ukraine forces began hitting both Donetsk and Luhansk, according to multiple reports, indicating heavy fighting by both sides along what is called the line of contact between the militias of Luhansk, Donetsk, and the Ukrainian army. Other video later in the week showed smoke rising from the Russian embassy in Kiev, which means they appear to be burning documents. And as observers note, this is standard diplomatic practice when a nation knows, one way or another, they're going to war. They burn all the sensitive documents and physically destroy all the communications and computer gear so that it can't fall into the hands of the country, whichever one it might end up being, that they are going to war against. And that really does seem to be a better indicator of what's actually happening than what you're probably hearing from the waste stream ministries of propaganda. Which brings me next to a story that's been developing for a long, long time now. I actually saw some of this over the weekend and decided, let's just wait and see how it pans out. And sure enough, it's actually beginning to get a little bit of waste stream coverage. Well, not from the WAPO and New York Times, of course, or any of the controlled network news. There's an acronym for you in the United States. But it looks like they're going to be forced to deal with it eventually, one way or another, and you can probably guess what that'll be, after lying about it literally for year after year after year after year now. And if this sounds like deja vu all over again, yeah, we've heard it, and we've heard it, and we've heard it. We just haven't heard it from CNN, ABC, or CBS, or the WAPO, of course. I can understand how you might be shaking your head at what's coming next, but would you believe, folks, that Hitlery and Comey and Clapper and Brennan and Obama and all the usual suspects really did, in fact, commit an actual coup over 5 years ago now? It was a crime so much bigger than Watergate on so many different levels, and just maybe the truth might eventually, well, seep out a bit more. Although we've known about it, as I've said, for a long time. It's just that finally, the waste stream may even have to pay attention. And case in point, the Daily Mail has had a number of headlines on this front. This one, for example, from Monday morning, says that the ex-DNI, or Director of National Intelligence, claims, see, they put that word in there, that Biden and Obama both knew about Hitler's campaign to hack Trump's servers. And that there was, quote, enough evidence in Durham's Russia probe to indict a whole bunch of people, well, multiple people at minimum. John Ratcliffe told special counsel John Durham that there is enough evidence to indict multiple people connected to the origins of the bogus Trump Russia probe. And the former DNI did meet with Bull Durham more than once. He pointed Durham to a declassified CIA memo of Clinton herself approving looking into Trump's Russia ties as a way of distracting from her own scandals involving email and bleach bit and the FBI hammering various evidence into non-existence. That report was sent directly to then Hormeister-in-Chief, yes, FBI Director James Comey, and then Deputy Assistant Director of Counterintelligence, hopefully you know this name, the scumbag Peter Strzok. And the new bombshell reports now reveal, says the Daily Mail, that Clinton herself paid people to hack servers at Trump Tower during the 2016 campaign and at White House servers, which, hey, back when we had a rule of law, that probably would have been considered a felony, if not espionage or outright treason, after the election. A poll taken before those reports came out, even, they note, shows that now even a majority of Democrats want Hillary Clinton questioned over her role in that Russia secret server scandal. And that means that fully 44% of party loyalists have now come to believe she should have been interrogated last October. But the number has jumped to over 66% as of more recent polling in January. Wow. Maybe the New York Times will have to eventually print something about it. By the way, I checked. Neither they nor the WAPO want to talk about it today, so far. Okay, well, unless you count this scurrilous opinion piece masquerading as news analysis, where Charlie Savage, writing for the New York Times, claims that the latest alarmist claims, that would be anybody that understands the facts here and has for years now, about spying on Trump appears to be flawed. But their explanation, he says, is Byzantine, underlining, get this, the need for journalists to decide properly, for you peons out there, what merits coverage and, obviously, what doesn't. And if that's not enough, they actually call it old news, besides. Yeah, we've ignored it for so long now, we'd hoped you'd forgotten already. What lying scum. Which brings me to this piece, and a clip from 60 Minutes that aired Sunday night. And by this point, folks, the news had actually already come out, and President Trump knew about it as he was being interviewed by lying Leslie Stahl for that piece of truly yellow journalism. I'm just going to play it and let you listen.
I wish you would interview Joe Biden like you interview me. It would be so good. You know what?
You like this, I thought. I thought you liked
it. I don't mind it. I don't mind it. But when I watch him walk out of a store and he's walking with a ice cream and the question the media asks him, what kind of ice cream? What flavor ice cream do you have? And he's in the midst of a scandal.
He's not.
And he's taking...
Oh, no, he's not. The lying scumbag who stole the office of the presidency and isn't fit to run an old folks home. The big guy himself who admitted on tape, and I've played it here before, that he squeezed Ukraine to shut down the prosecution of his son and himself as a condition of getting $1 billion. Good grief. No, he's not in the midst of any kind of scandal. What a reprobate. Let's play it again.
And he's in the midst of a scandal.
He's not.
And he's taking...
He's
of course
not.
He is,
no.
Leslie.
Come on.
Of course he is. It's the biggest, second biggest scandal. So, the biggest scandal was when they spied on my campaign. They spied on my campaign,
there's
Leslie.
No real evidence of that.
Of course there is.
No.
It's all over the place. Leslie,
sir,
they spied on my campaign and they got caught.
Can I say something?
You better let me because I'll just edit this afterwards and put it in anyway.
Leslie,
sir,
they spied on my campaign and they got caught.
Can I say something? You know, this is 60 Minutes. And we can't put on things we can't verify.
You won't put it on because it's bad for Biden.
We can't put on things we can't verify.
Leslie, they spied on my campaign.
Well, we can't verify
that. It's been totally verified.
No.
It's been, just go down and get the papers. They spied on my campaign. They got caught.
No.
And then they went much further than that, and they got caught. And you will see that, Leslie. And you know that, but you just don't want to put it on the air.
No, as a matter of fact, I don't know that.
Okay.
And I'm going to keep lying and doubling down because that's exactly what we do. And folks, if it's not obvious by now that that is exactly what they do, you do have to wonder at this point, what will it finally take? The good news here is that at least when it comes to sources like the Daily Mail, maybe they're far enough away on the other side of the pond that they're not quite so beholden to the WAPO and New York Times and those who have bought them off, or their handlers at the Ministries of Truth who work for the various three-letter intelligence agencies. Oh, did I really say that? You betcha, folks. This is beyond garden variety yellow journalism. What we've seen, literally, for years now, is a lying news media that makes the old Soviet Pravda look like actual truth by comparison. And that, I guess, at this point, more than the story itself, because we knew that Hitler was involved in treason, literally, since long before the 2016 election. But what's really interesting here is the fact that sources like the Daily Mail and others are actually coming out and being forced to print some of this. Here's a headline from late Monday, updated Tuesday, Greenwich Mean Time. Quote, I can't speak to that, said Biden's deputy press secretary, Karine Jean-Pierre, who told a reporter no less than 3 times to go to the DOJ, yeah, the Department of Justice, we'll lie to you, when pressed about Durham's bombshell allegations that Hitlery, they did spell it wrong, spied on President Trump when he was president, and that both Biden and Obama knew. The White House spokeslawyer on Monday referred all questions about the special counsel John Durham's investigation to the Department of Just Us. Yeah, if anybody can lie to your face, it's Merrick Garland. And they noted the new filing suggests that the Clinton campaign paid an internet company to access servers at the White House in search for links, even if they had to make them up, between Trump and Russia, Russia, Russia. No less than 3 times the White House spokeslawyer was asked if that amounted to spying. Hey folks, let's be honest here. It does sound a whole lot more serious than a 2-bit break-in at the Democrat National Committee headquarters to steal something out of a file cabinet, now doesn't it? Yeah, the Watergate break-in was a pop gun by comparison. And three separate times, she refused to answer, saying, I can't speak to that.
I see nothing. I know nothing.
And, oh, yeah, concludes the Daily Mail in their coverage of this bit of, well, beyond historic scandal and the breakdown of American government, the Department of Justice did not immediately respond to their request for comment. So I guess, folks, with all that on the table, this might be a good day to go to the Wayback Machine and look for a story that pretty well encapsulates at least a bit of what we've been talking about for oh so long now. This is from mid-December of 2020, over a year ago now. Even then, your host said, it might help to connect a few dots, that is, if the Waystream would even talk about it. Newly declassified documents released to the U.S. Congress appear to prove the expensive and nationally demoralizing Russia, Russia, Russia narrative was in fact nothing but a broad political hoax by the DNC and the Obama regime, with some of the usual suspects, but especially the evil former director of the CIA, John Brennan. The Federalist reports that newly declassified handwritten notes, we've talked about these in the past, from that former CIA director scumbag, showed that the U.S. intelligence community knew in 2016, if not before, that the Russia, Russia, Russian intelligence they were supposedly actively monitoring and potentially injecting disinformation to had to do with the Clinton anti-Trump collusion narrative. In other words, Hillary and company and their dupes orchestrated the whole thing. The intelligence concerning Russia's knowledge of the Clinton campaign plans was so concerning to Brennan and other national security officials, continues this piece, that they personally informed Obama, there goes the plausible deniability, of the matter in the Oval Office in the summer of 2016. And the handwritten notes from Brennan were declassified by DNI John Ratcliffe and provided to Congress on Tuesday afternoon, according to which Brennan and the U.S. intelligence community knew months prior to the 2016 election that the collusion smear they had planned was the result of a campaign operation hatched by none other than presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. Said the handwritten notes, quote, we're getting additional insight into Russian activities from redacted. Cite alleged approval by Hillary Clinton, he didn't spell it right, on 26 July of a proposal from one of her foreign policy advisors to vilify Donald Trump by stirring up a scandal claiming interference by Russia, Russia, Russia. Well, no, he just said Russian security services, unquote. And furthermore, the declassified intel shows that the CIA and other so-called intelligence agencies actually suspected early on that many, if not most, of the key claims underpinning the Russia, Russia, Russia collusion narrative could themselves be the product of deliberate Russian disinfo. And that's, again, one of the big reasons I call her Hitlery, folks. One of the key elements of the Hitlerian big lie, along with Saul Alinsky and his rules for radicals, of course, is you blame your enemy for what you yourself are actually up to. And last week, Ratcliffe released a declassified memo, based in part on Brennan's notes, noting that Russian intelligence was aware of the Clinton campaign's plan, increasing the likelihood that it would be tainted by the same disinformation they were trying to pin on their political opponents. When the Clinton campaign hired Christopher Steele, a foreign agent in the pocket of a sanctioned Russian oligarch, to concoct that dossier of allegations against Trump, the primary source of the most salacious and damning allegations came from a suspected Russian spy named Igor Danchenko. And last month, even the now thankfully almost out of there Attorney General William Barr informed Congress that the disreputable, disgusting, and not to be trusted FBI, but hey, I put most of that in there, was so concerned about Danchenko, who'd been dubbed the primary subsource used by the Clinton campaign and Christopher Steele in his thoroughly debunked dossier, that it had previously labeled him a national security threat and investigated him to determine if he was a Russian spy. But the FBI called off the so-called investigation once Danchenko left the United States and was no longer within the purview of FBI's domestic counterintelligence mission. Or maybe, folks, there's another explanation.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
So as we go to break, I gotta ask, how long until the Waystream finally admits the election, too, was a great big stinking farce?
Yeah.
Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and the rest of the week, still continuing chronologically, contained a lot of what I have to call in-between news days, where we seem to be in between a whole bunch of stuff we've been hearing over and over again for so long now. World War III is on again, off again. Whoops, looks like it's back on again. The Depression is on again, off again, and they keep lying about the inflation associated with it too. But it does seem to be back on again. Still, there may be a little time left if you haven't yet stocked up on all of the stuff that pretty soon it might not be available at all. And likewise, in now totalitarian communist Canada, their version of Tiananmen Square is on again, off again, and oops, seems to be back on again, but with a twist. Which means what I need to do is start off with at least a headline review to kind of give us the lay of the land. Starting with the Zero Head summary of a bunch of them, which says, previously, back on Tuesday, which seems eons ago now, with the Russian announcement that they'd begun drawing down troops from the border with Ukraine, the prospect for a diplomatic way out of the crisis looked, well, promising. That is, if maybe you were a bit on the gullible side. But as has been the case for the past weeks, it says, the whole ordeal has involved a flood of mixed signals and contradictory headlines. Some of us would say deception and outright lies, alternating, though, from promises of dialogue and de-escalation to quickly being back on a war footing coupled with threats, a narrative which seems to, as they put it, turn on the dime every hour. And now, as of Thursday, more escalation seems in the cards as prospects for diplomacy and open dialogue grow dimmer by the hour. Quote, Russia has expelled U.S. Deputy Chief Diplomatic Mission Bart Gorman from the country, said the U.S. Embassy there. According to what are called Russian state sources, and the U.S. has vowed that it will respond in kind. Still, though, Russia re-emphasized Thursday that there is no invasion of Ukraine, at least in the immediate offing, unless, of course, the Biden Führer keeps poking him with a stick, and they're not planning any offensive, according to Interfax. And the ripples, or is it shockwaves, are being felt in markets, too. Stocks in the ruble have both extended losses, says a related Zero Hedge story, as Russia expelled the deputy U.S. ambassador, and the U.S. claims that invasion is imminent, again. But on that score, there may just be more. Here, for example, again from the realm of economics, another on-again, off-again story. Retail sales in the U.S. exploded higher in January, says a Wednesday piece from Zero Hedge, and this after December's gravely disappointing drop in retail sales. Analysts had been convinced January will see all that pent-up demand come flying back, and they expected a full 2% month-over-month jump, despite the dramatic collapse in consumer confidence. In fact, the rebound was even greater than expected, as headline, and there's the key word, folks, retail sales exploded by a stunning 3.8% month-over-month. That's the highest since March of 2021, and the surge back then due to the money-printing extravaganza. But wait, turns out there's more, maybe even a fly in the ointment. Maybe this is why the ripple took a day or so to play out. While adjusted, and that's the key word again, retail sales soared by 3.8% month over month, the unadjusted retail sales data for January, you have to look deeper to see this one, collapsed by a record, are you sitting down, folks, 18.5% month over month. So, yeah, one more time we've seen it. This is, as Zero Hedge puts it, the biggest seasonal adjustment on record. Let me hear you say it, folks. Let's go, Brandon. I suspect we'll come back to that one shortly, but let's return first briefly to the Canadian Communist Party and Fidel's love child there, the new dictator of Canada. Yeah, Trudeau's Gestapo hasn't yet run over a trucker with a tank, but as we outlined in the first segment, it's not like they haven't indicated their intentions to escalate. And on the fascism front, the public-private partnership, especially when it comes to banksters and those who are controlling the, well, no longer money, but at least currency supply there, their heavy-handedness not only raised some eyebrows this week, but may have panicked some folks too. as the Wall Street Journal put it in a midweek story. As we've already discussed, Canada's dictator invoked the Emergency Powers Act, and it extends beyond even martial law, aimed at putting an end to any free speech or demonstrations in the People's Republic to the north. So the Journal, Ottawa Police, in their notice, claimed that, quote, with the new police powers made available under the federal emergency order, it is now illegal for new protesters or their supporters to enter downtown Ottawa and join the demonstration. Police also said driver's licenses could be revoked, and separately they're talking about doing it forever, this per a separate emergency order from the province of Ontario. And furthermore, the new rules make demands of a broad list of entities, including, and we'll come back to this one in just a second, banks, investment firms, credit unions, loan companies, securities dealers, fundraising platforms, and you know who that's directed at, insurance companies, and fraternal benefit societies, who must all determine whether they're in, quote, possession or control of property of a person who's dared to attend what they now call an illegal protest, or even providing supplies to demonstrators, according to orders published by the communist regime late Tuesday night. And if they find such a person on their customer list, they must freeze their accounts and report it immediately to the Canadian SS, a.k.a. the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, or Canada's version of their internal Stasi, the intelligence service. And any suspicious transactions must also be reported to the country's anti-money laundering agency called FinTrack. Said an investment CEO on Bloomberg TV, quote, I think this caught everyone off guard last night when it was released. Yeah, there's a lot of questions right now in figuring out who we're supposed to be targeting and what do we have to look at, unquote. Which brings me to the other headlines on that same subject. Are they still unintended consequences, or is this precisely what the Nazis in the North actually intended all along? Two stories there. The TD Bank has caved and agreed to surrender Freedom Convoy donations, as the organizers of the protests are now increasingly being forced to turn to crypto. Writes J.D. Hayes for Natural News, Western governments are quickly losing legitimacy by the day as they continue to crack down like fascists on legitimate protests against their ongoing tyrannical policies involving, but obviously not limited to, and we'll get there eventually, COVID-1984. These attempts include, but are clearly not going to be limited to, crushing the Freedom Convoy protests in Canada, once thought of correctly as serene, calm, and tolerant up until just a few weeks ago, and they seem to intend to poke on those folks until they get the desired response. TD Bank, for example, has announced plans to surrender about $1 million in unrefunded GoFundMe donations that were made to them under the condition they be given to the people they were intended, in addition to around $400,000 Canadian that the group took in via donations. In other words, writes Hayes, this is legalized theft at the behest of the Canadian Communist Party government, all because, says J.D. Hayes, Trudeau and his fascist regime don't like the fact that some Canadians just don't agree with and are willing to put their lives on the line to make the point with his insane COVID vaccine mandates for truckers who end up being alone in their cabs 10 full hours a day. TD Bank told CTV late last week they would surrender the purloined funds to an Ontario court, which basically means their big brother government. This headline came out late yesterday afternoon saying that while invoking his so-called Emergency Act VOR-type powers and his order to seize bank accounts of anyone and everyone found donating, how dare they, to the Truckers Freedom Convoy, the Canadian Prime Minister, masquerading as a dictator, you know the one, Justin Fidel Trudeau, has apparently triggered a bank run in Canada because at the time, the withdrawals ended up being so widespread that Canada's largest banks, including Royal Bank, BMO Bank of Montreal, and CIBC Bank were all offline, leading Canadians to talk about it and wonder what was going on. Here's one poignant tweet. What could cause all three to crash on the same day, just hours after Trudeau's expropriation order? Unquote. Well, you might be thinking, people are trying to get their money while they still can and while they think it's still money. Many are asking, why take a chance? You know what's coming next, don't you? I guess it's Let's Go Fidel, too. From Michael Snyder at the Economic Collapse blog, five new numbers, he writes, that prove that America, too, has horrifying inflation and a crisis which is only just going to get worse. Briefly, and you've heard some of these here over the last week or so, the producer price index has risen at a rate of 9.7% over the previous 12 months. According to CNBC, that's close to a brand new record. That was followed, as you may recall, by consumer prices, which were up 7.5% allegedly over the past 12 months. But the real number, calculated the old-fashioned way, honestly, as ShadowStats and John Williams do, show that it was about double that. Truck trailer prices in January 22, number two, were 29.6% higher than they were back in January a year ago. Number three, the U.S. Bureau of Lying Statistics, it says labor here, is telling us that the price of used vehicles rose by an astounding 40.5% in the January 21 through 22 time frame. Number four, you may have noticed you're paying a heck of a lot more at the pump these days. If you can believe it, the price of gasoline, too, has actually risen over 40% since the Chinese Communist puppet was first thrust into the White House. And yeah, number five, even the price of lumber is again surging, adding more than $18,600, says the National Association of Home Builders, to anybody that's still able to consider building an average new home. Even remodeling one is up over $7,300. And as you probably know, and he concludes, pressure has been building on the money printers at the Fed to raise interest rates, maybe by 50 basis points come the Ides of March. Well, or at least until they hear glass breaking. Which brings us to the humor on the headline front. Michael Snyder points to it, so does the Gateway Pundit, saying, you know, it's bad when 95% of the leftist media is right behind you. They've got you covered. And still, the best you can do is a 35%, maybe, and that's with lies probably, approval rating. Could it be the record inflation? The wide open borders. While we don't worry about the U.S. border, oh yeah, the borders of Ukraine are certainly sacrosanct. We'll let them in by the millions here, but send young boys to die to protect them there. While invaders get free bus passes, those sent to die to protect Ukraine's borders are forced to take the poison poke. Ponder the irony. Could it have been the tens of billions of dollars in armaments that Americans are no longer allowed to have, and they'll get around to that real soon now, that he left the Taliban, maybe the 14,000 Americans that were stranded there too, or could it be the Free Crack Pipe Initiative? That is, if you're the right color, or maybe the wrong color, but still, it's racist to the core and pretty much disgusting besides. Could it be his dementia? Because that can't even be hidden anymore. And, oh yeah, who could forget? He may have forgotten a lot of his past criminality, but he still likes to try to grow up kids. Whatever it is, they say, no doubt about it, the Biden Fuhrer's in trouble. Even among the Communist Party that once called themselves Democrats. Here's one of those clips that would be funny if it wasn't so blankety-blank and deadly. America's very own Dr. Mengele does it again. This has to do with why he wants to continue to make sure that we muzzle those kiddies and stunt their brains and social development. And it comes from where else? The criminally negligent network.
Now, we could get lucky because the trajectory right now is going way down. And it very well may be that if you take masks off the kids in the next week or so, it's going to keep going down. But you've really got to be careful. You know, you don't want to say it's an absolutely wrong decision. It's understandable why people want to take masks off the kids.
Yeah, not all of their parents want them brain-addled for life.
But right now, given the level of activity that we have, it is risky.
It's really risky, I think, because the more people figure out what he's been doing to them and what he's been doing to their kids, the more chance there is of him hanging from a short rope. Or far better, of course, being tried for crimes against humanity. Related story next from a day or so ago, but it fits here in this sequence of headlines, comes from the Epoch Times about the new dictator of New York City. And we thought we were rid of the old communists. Mayor Eric Adams announced earlier this week that 1,430 public sector workers in the city have now been fired. Octung, they're out of there, for failing to meet the 11 February deadline to take their Zyklon B injection, or else. As many as 4,000 city workers, though, were given notice back in January to take the full set of poison pokes, and however many they decide to add to the list, you know, the boosters, as a condition of employment. Or don't let the door hit you into you-know-what on the way out. Three-quarters of those workers had already been on leave without pay for months, having missed the earlier deadline, to get poisoned if they wanted to stay on the job. And here's the line that ought to be national headline, folks. On Monday, the mayor, Sick, suggested that the workers had chosen to leave their own jobs by refusing to commit suicide on command. Get this, quote, Our goal was always to vaccinate, not terminate, said Adams. Well, your host says, terminate their lives anyway, but not necessarily their jobs. We'll follow that out with some headline irony from the UK, where a group of doctors, says Owen Evans via the Epoch Times, and scientists and economists, psychologists, and other academics in the UK have called for an immediate investigation into, are you sitting down, folks, the increasing, unbelievable, unprecedented, and ooh, what could have done it, death rate amongst males age 15 through 19. Even though it just happens to coincide precisely with the rollout of vaccinations, who could have thought it, to this very same age group? Especially once they take the second Zyklon B hit. Says the Office for National Statistics in no longer Great Britain, there has been a rise in the death rate for adolescent males over the same time period for the last 5 years before that, but this still could not be used to draw any reliable conclusions as to a potential correlation.
That's my story. Oh, that's my story. My story, and I'm sticking to it.
From there, two more quick revealing headlines. One of them is one of those duh headlines, unless you get your news from the criminally negligent networks. From Ethan Huff in Natural News, proof, COVID, not vaccines, actually cause AIDS. And there's a name for it nowadays. You've heard it here, anyway. It's called Vaccine-Induced Acquired Immune Deficiency Syndrome, or VAIDS. And it's one of the more serious long-term adverse health effects caused by the Zyklon B injections. In effect, these repeated and continuing shots are destroying people's immune systems over time, leaving them prone to infections of all kinds. And guess what they're going to do? Yeah, they're going to blame what comes next on a variation of AIDS, too. Not the fact that people have been taking the Zyklon B poke. And since they're already lying about the statistics and even the number of people that are dropping dead, that might not be nearly as hard as you might have thought. And from there, one more headline. Let's call this another duh headline, too. Air travel faces long-haul flight back to recovery, it says. Yeah, from Tyler Durden and Zero Hedge, as international air travel came to a complete near standstill in 2020 due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the aviation industry suffered what it described then as, quote, the worst year in history for air travel demand. I guess people not only don't want to be treated like cattle and forced to put on face diapers and suffer other humiliation in order to be, well, let's add, treated like slaves, too, and allowed to fly, they're getting sick and tired of all the other stuff being shoved down their throats to boot. Bottom line, air travel worldwide is down by about three quarters below 2019 levels. And listen to this load of BS. While the rolled out of the not vaccine-fueled hopes of a swift recovery, they were dashed with the emergence of, well, vaccine-induced evil like Delta and Omicron, which disrupted international and domestic travel during the summer and holiday seasons. Oh, who could have imagined such a thing, except those people who were paying attention and actually following the science? And just imagine, folks, what happens when the panic begins to wear off and Big Brother and his deep state global reset minions are forced to roll out the next be afraid, be very afraid plandemic. I want to spend a few minutes today on a great piece that I just saw from Addison Wiggin, who writes for the Daily Reckoning, about what he called three revolutionary cycles all converging at once. And he asks the question, will you survive the Great Reset? Our beat here, he begins, that the Daily Reckoning is money. But a lot of what we write about isn't directly related to money. It's really about people. Because in our business, we try to think of the relationships that we create with you, the people who actually open things like this email, because we're looking for solutions to complex questions, he says, just like you are. And he adds, you can't write about economics every day, or you'll just plain go crazy, as his friend and mentor, and a fellow that I've admired for years, Bill Bonner, once said. You can't write about everything every day, or your readers will go crazy. Too. You have to write about something that's richer, fuller, and actually more important. And that describes the totality of the human drama for both good and evil. Human relationships, human passion. These are the subjects that propel us forward. And all great drama, continues Wiggin, is derived from the passions of men and women and how they interact with one another. Fear, greed, mob mentality, and insanity are all just a few of the very interesting human emotions. And ultimately, the study of economics is an exploration of human passion writ large all across history. It's inexact, it's frustrating, but it's endlessly fascinating. And, continues Addison Wiggin, I love to explore it with the brightest minds I know of. And he refers here to the Wiggin Sessions, an interview series he's been conducting for a couple of years now, where he's spoken with over 70 of the world's sharpest, most independent financial thinkers, people like the aforementioned Bill Bonner, Jim Rickards, George Gilder, and a bunch of others, although you're not going to find Jim Cramer on the list. All of these people and others, he says, are scientists one way or another who've studied probabilities, plotted them on a chart, typically referred to as a normal or sometimes a bell curve distribution, in which the most likely events all bunch up right in the middle of the curve, but the funny things happen out on the ends of the curve. The land of fat tails and black swans, where the rare events, or maybe sometimes not so rare events, are registered. Explained Bill Bonner, scientists have found small bumps and bulges, he said. Things that weren't expected to happen very often actually happened a lot more often than they thought. Like 100-year floods, for example. They happen every 88 years. And one in a million shots end up hitting their mark about every 700,000 or so. Statisticians, says Bonner, refer to these odd bulges on the extremities of the bell-shaped curve as fat tails. And instead of tailing off as they're supposed to, the rare events seem to swell up where you don't expect them. Unquote. Your host, folks, who has a background in engineering and understands quite a bit about these things, too, notes that, yeah, what this means is that the events aren't really normally distributed like you'd think. There's something else going on here, and therein lies the rub. But our mission, says Addison Wiggin, is to anticipate these fat tail events, what many call black swans, while the mainstream media sit right there in the middle of the bell curve where it's nice and safe and people get fleeced if they're not paying attention. He goes on to add how many waystream or mainstream sources anticipated the great financial crisis of 2008. Hint, not many. Some of us, including your host, were aware of it, but Bill Bonner and Jim Rickards did, and perhaps part of the reason your host noted it was because I was paying attention to them way back then, too. How many, though, in the mainstream predicted the election of Donald Trump in 2016 or the Brexit? Same answer, but Bonner and Rickards predicted both. Those fat tail events may in fact end up being more predictable than you might think. Not perfectly, that's not possible even with perfect information, but at least it is to a very reasonable and certainly helpful degree. Now, what Addison Wiggin is leading up to here, yes, includes a sales pitch, there usually is, but it's the question that was headlined up front. Will you be among those who survive the Great Reset? And here he quotes another investor and a successful entrepreneur named Mark Moss, who told him in those Wiggin sessions that obviously, quote, anybody that's halfway paying attention understands that tensions are high across the world. There's even talk in the United States about another civil war or a national divorce. We have protests happening in every country of the world, and it's not just because of the pandemic. That's a key piece. Most people around the world think that they're pushing back on mandates and lockdowns. They are, but before the pandemic, there were already 10 countries in the world with over a million people each in the streets protesting. So it was already in progress, already happening. They're still in the streets protesting, just on a different subject now. But the key piece is that the entire world is pushing back, and it's accelerating, I note. And again, says Mark Moss, it's not just a black swan event. Suggests Addison Wiggin, what's going on is three revolutionary cycles all converging at once, right now. And ultimately, they will slaughter the unprepared when they collide. What are they? The three different cycles? One is what Moss calls PSC, which means political, social, and cultural. Or nowadays, folks, your host might say socialist and cultural. Anyway, it's a political cycle, which is part of human nature. Then we also have technological cycles and revolutions. Finally, we have financial cycles also, which correlate to revolutions. His main thesis, says Wiggin, is that you can't just consider those cycles in isolation, as most people do, and that's a mistake, or they don't have the vision to see the bigger picture. But you do have to understand what's coming. Quote, the reason why it's important, says Ross, to look at all three of these converging factors is because, like any financial indicator, one alone is not conclusive. You need to look for multiple indicators that are all showing the same thing. For example, interest rates are at zero. We're at the end of a long-term credit cycle. So what's going to happen next? Is the dollar going to remain the world's reserve currency or whatever else? Now, your host will quickly interject here. Oh, yeah, we can look at history, too. There's never been a fiat currency in history that survived pretty much longer than the dollar already has, so I think that one is a given. But he's right. The point is, we do have to look at those other factors as well and understand what they say about how it might play out. Says Moss, the trouble is, they're just looking at one piece of the puzzle. You have to understand the other two, he says, in order to really understand how we got here, where we are now, and most importantly, what's up next. And as your host will now summarize, folks, that's the reason why I suggest Scripture and the Mashiach all tell us over and over and over again that it's important that we know the times and the seasons, that we not be caught unaware as by a thief in the night, that we pay attention, in other words, and recognize the patterns, the cycles, so that we can understand what we need to do now, and most importantly, of course, who we serve. I'll leave you with some food for thought. Given what we're now seeing, the intended murder of hundreds of millions of people or more, the coordinated worldwide destruction of the last vestiges of freedom, and arguably what looks to be the biggest economic meltdown in history, is it still even possible not to believe that a climax of biblical-level proportions is at hand?